Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Good morning, everybody. Evan Giddings alongside Dan Devone here on Warriors This Week. And Dan, look, first and foremost, I got to just get this out of the way. Thank you very much for being a fantastic friend, for being a fantastic running mate, for being someone that when you call upon him, he answers the call. Because last night, well, I needed you, buddy, and you came through for me. I was listening on my way back from a beautiful wedding. Shout out to the Watts. It was a fantastic time. Had a great time with my friends. And I listened to you break down apparently a 17-point loss for the Warriors. What the hell happened last night?
Well, first of all, don't ever do that to me again.
What?
You're really testing the limits of our friendship. Pushing the boundaries, as they like to say, as I was relaxing and enjoying a beautiful Friday night. Now, it was, yeah, of course, I'm there for you. Enjoy. Getting an opportunity to talk about the Warriors and Warriors Live at a pre- and post-game show. But, that was Jonathan Kuminga taking a step backwards after he had taken two steps forward.
Whoa. We're not even going to get a minute into the show. We're already ripping the kid?
Not ripping him. It's just at this point, I think it's sort of matter of fact. I mean, there's a lot of what it is that we can sort of get into with the young man, because I do think that there's something sort of going on between his ears. There's a psychosomatic element to all of this and his approach to the game as a Golden State Warrior. And I emphasize as a Golden State Warrior.
Well, first of all, I don't even know if I know what that word means. Psychosomatic? I mean, first of all, I do think that last night was significant from a couple of standpoints. Jonathan Kuminga taking a step back, I think, was a byproduct of those choices. And the biggest one is obviously Draymond Green going to the bench and Jonathan Kuminga stepping into the starting lineup. And I feel like that's really where this all begins and effectively ended, because they got the crap kicked out of them by the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are looking closer to the team that represented in the Western Conference Finals last year than the team that was kind of a below 500 right before this 4 or 5 game win streak that they've been on. They'll see them again on Sunday, but What did you expect when you saw, because I was at the ceremony, it was beautiful, lots of love in the air, and I see a tweet from Anthony Slater that says, Steph Curry, Brandon Pajemski, Andrew Wiggins, Jonathan Kuminga, and Kevon Looney. And about an hour earlier, it was reported that Draymond Green was going to be active for that game. So, myself, I was intrigued when I saw the starting five. And I think there's, again, a lot of different reasons for it that we can get into. But what was your first reaction when you saw that?
Well, it was Jonathan Kuminga's. It was predicated on Jonathan Kuminga's performance the night before. That is, Steve Kerr would say after the game, they want to maximize Jonathan Kuminga, especially when it looked as though he had turned the corner. And so if it's an opportunity to play more, let's get you into the starting lineup. And I think they wanted to ride those coattails of the 33 points and the career high that he had the evening before against the Houston Rockets. And they liked the matchups. And Draymond Green, of course, is going to close with the Warriors. But it was an opportunity to insert Jonathan Kuminga into that starting lineup alongside Andrew Wiggins. But, again, I don't know if you want to hold off on getting into Jonathan Kuminga, or we can talk about, you know, the lineup change. But it's an offense that's anemic. And I never thought I'd be saying that about a Golden State Warrior basketball team with Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Steve Kerr as their head coach, but they can't score the basketball. That's the second consecutive night they were held to under 100 points. The 90 last night was a season low, and it's clear that not only is it, you know, Steph or bust, but the chasm between Steph and that next guy who's going to give you consistent points is getting more and more vast.
Well, I'm with you on that. The offense, to me, is by far and away the largest issue with this basketball team. Through the first 15 games, they only had one in which they scored less than 100 points. Their last, well, seven games, in which they lost six of them, they failed to crack 100 in three of them. That's pretty significant, especially in the NBA in 2024, with how prevalent scoring is, how quick the game is, and how many threes that the Warriors both want to get up and how many threes the league gets up. For you not to score 100 in a basketball game, that's pretty significant. I feel like I'm watching a college basketball game from the 1990s that's 60 to 55. Like those kinds of offenses that are bogged down. And Kerr actually said this after the Rockets game, that was 90s basketball. It was 93 or 99 to 93. And they won that game. They got just enough offense. But you can't win consistently like that. You got to be able to put the ball in the hole. And again, this is a team that's not going to average 120. They're not the Sacramento Kings. They're not the Atlanta Hawks. They're not the Charlotte Hornets. They're not going to play up and down and score at a high clip. But you got to be able to generate some consistent offense. I think the Timberwolves went on a 23 or 25 to 2 run over the course of 8 minutes. You can't have 8 minutes in which you only scored 2 points.
Did you think you'd ever be saying that going back to 2016, 2018, that they're not an up-and-down basketball team that's going to score a lot of points? I mean, they started all of this. They were the team that recreated the landscape of the NBA. And when you look at them right now, it's a team that's trying to do it a different way because he's trying to work towards his strengths, and the strength of that team is obviously that they have supposed depth and just enough scoring. I think part of the problem with the Warriors is it's not only relegated to Jonathan Kuminga, but it's a host of guys. We can get into Brandon Podziemski and do a whole show on him. There are so many guys. There's no room where there's zero tolerance, I think, for someone like Podziemski not to be able to score the basketball. Now, he doesn't have to be that second guy to Steph, but he sure as hell got to score more than 8 points in nearly 40 minutes of play like he did against the Houston Rockets. And I get it. He does a lot of good things on the floor, and I've been one of his strongest supporters. But I said this last night, I don't know if the end's justifying the means any longer. And when you have Podziemski, who, if I'm defending the Golden State Warriors, and they're coming to town, I'm like, we don't have to necessarily worry about that guy.
I was going to say, do you have to defend him?
Do you have to defend Looney? Do you have to defend Trayce Jackson-Davis? Do you have to defend GP2? Do you have to defend Draymond Green? Yeah, a little bit, because his offense is better this year. You see where I'm going with this? There's too many of those guys on this team. Like, you cannot have that many quote-unquote role players. Somebody has got to score. And again, you don't have to give me 25, but you sure as hell better give me 12 to 15.
Well, you have to be able to do something well. And that's probably the biggest issue that plagues this team is they don't do enough things consistently well, even on the defensive side. If you look at, again, the 15-game start that the Warriors underwent, they were a top-five team in terms of defense. The last, again, seven games, they haven't been able to keep teams out of scoring the basketball enough. And they are predicated on what they do defensively. I think that's another indictment of the offense. If they don't get stops, if they don't prevent teams from scoring, they can't get out and run. They can't get easy looks. And at the half court, they struggle. But that's where, to your point, if you don't have enough ones or guys that you can get the ball to, you have to lean into the few that you actually have. And I think that's where Kuminga comes into play, and that's why he was inserted into the starting lineup last night. It's because, number one, he played obviously extremely well against Houston. He scored a third of their points. He had 14 in the fourth quarter. He was sensational against the Rockets, and that's a top-two defense in the NBA currently. But you have to give he, along with Curry, some sort of opportunity to play alongside each other and figure out if they can both offensively figure this thing out. Wiggins is the other third player that you have to respect offensively, although he's not a 20-point-per-game scorer. But those are your three guys. If those three players are not getting you 60 to maybe 70 points a game, it's going to be very hard for this team to crack 100 consistently.
And now Wiggins, as well as Moody, day-to-day, and could be out for an extended period of time. He's got the bad ankle.
I was a little surprised Wiggins played last night.
That ankle was questionable going into that contest, so you're right. So now it becomes even more dire when you think about where you're going to get your offense from. You know, when you think about it, we always do this every year. Like, we have this rush to judgment. Oh, the Warriors, the depth in the first week of the season. My God, look what they've done. They went on that road trip and beat three of the best teams in the NBA and went 4-1, taking care of the Celtics on the road, beating OKC. And we are so quick to anoint them.
Championship contenders.
Yeah, they're going back to the Western Conference Finals. It's all back. It's back, baby. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee Bucks are trash. Minnesota's underwhelming. All of this within the first month of the season, which is why they say you just got to let this breathe, give it 20 to 25 games before you sort of recognize just how good or bad a basketball team is. And I think it was interesting that we saw two teams that I think might be headed in completely different directions, where Minnesota was a sub-500 team, and of course, they hit rock bottom when they lost to Sacramento, and it culminated a four-game losing streak, and under 500, and then, of course, you had their leader, Anthony Edwards, who just, you know, he went off on the team. Although he did it in sort of a wry way with a smile on his face. But it was a young man being a leader, saying there's too much finger pointing, we're soft, and he included himself in that criticism. And now Minnesota has gone on a four-game winning streak since that fire and brimstone speech. And I think as you pointed out early on in the show, they look like Minnesota of a year ago. What was Minnesota of a year ago? Head and shoulders above the rest of the league as far as defense. Clearly the best defensive team, long and athletic, with Naz Reid and Daniels and Rudy Gobert, and tough to score against. And then Anthony Edwards doing what it is that he does, and that's what propelled them to the Western Conference Finals. And they look as though they're getting that back. Meanwhile, Golden State is headed in the other direction.
But what's the biggest difference, you think, between Minnesota and Houston? Because Houston is also one with their defense. They're a team that's, I think, 15-9 now,
Edwards,
after their loss.
I think Houston is one of those few teams in the NBA, both East and Western Conference, where you look at them and you're saying, okay, that's a good team, but who's their go-to? Who's their number one?
No. I'm 100% with you. Anthony Edwards is the best player between those two teams by far. But my question is more aimed at why the Warriors were able to succeed more offensively against Houston without Curry, without Draymond. They have both those two players back, and they take a step back offensively two nights later against Minnesota.
I think, again, a lot of it just goes back to Jonathan Kuminga. You said how he and Steph have to learn to play together, and seeing more of them could benefit this basketball team. I also think that it could be the worst thing for the Warriors and for Jonathan Kuminga. There's just something about when Steph Curry and Draymond Green are on the floor, he becomes a different player. He's a different person. And I think it gets, you know, we talked about how if Jonathan Kuminga was on any other team aside from that of the Golden State Warriors, why it's unfair to compare him to what is really one of the strongest draft classes in recent memory, where you have like eight guys who are all impactful. Usually in an NBA draft, there's maybe one or two. And in his draft class, whether it's Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green or the Josh Giddies or the Shingoons of the world, Franz Wagner, all have been really good basketball players for their respective team. And part of the reason why we defend Jonathan Kuminga is because, well, he's with the Warriors. He's not getting an opportunity to go play in Orlando, make your mistakes, play for 35 minutes, and learn to score in this league and be that guy that can warrant another contract. Because he's with the Warriors, he's getting limited run, and he's doing it in a much more restricted structure. But now I'm beginning to think that the fact that he's playing under Kerr's tutelage and under the watchful eye of Draymond Green and Steph Curry is also the worst thing for this guy, because it doesn't fit his personality. And I think he becomes a reluctant shooter when Steph Curry is there. And if he's missing a couple of shots, he's deferring. Whereas the other night, with no Steph Curry, no Draymond Green, he did what we've grown to expect of Jonathan Kuminga. He got sped up, made some mistakes, threw the ball away, had some turnovers, but he knew he wasn't getting pulled. And he wasn't looking over his shoulder at Kerr saying, am I coming out now? He's like, well, who the hell are you going to play? I know I'm staying in this game. And as a result, we saw what it is that we saw with the 33 points. But more importantly, towards the end of that game, where he just took over. And I think he was a confident basketball player without those two. And with the return of Steph Curry and Draymond Green, he loses that confidence. Especially if he's missing a couple of shots, he becomes very, very reluctant. And he can't be that guy. He has to lose the conscience. He has to be a little Klay Thompson, Trae Young-esque in order for him to be successful, I think, with the Warriors.
So Curry's the problem.
Indirectly, yes.
I say that facetiously.
No. But I think that there is some, through the, as it relates juxtaposed to Jonathan Kuminga's scoring, yes, he is.
Well, I think that last night, I don't know if I agree with the whole looking over your shoulder thing last night. I think that this is what is naturally going to happen to a 22-year-old that's really getting his first opportunity to be handed the keys. You're going to see some roller coaster rides. You're going to see a game like he had against Houston, where he goes for 33 and he's the man and he's closing it out, and then he's going to play against a really good Minnesota team that also, I do believe, is differently constructed, better defensively than Houston, and he's going to struggle. But he still played 29 minutes, which is second most behind Curry. He didn't get to the free throw line, which is a bit concerning, but he didn't shoot it particularly well. And I just think that this thing is going to take some time. My biggest question is, do the Warriors have enough time? And does Curry believe, and also Draymond from that standpoint, because he's the one that got benched, whether you want to call it that or not, he got demoted. He's not starting. That's something. We can listen to him in a little bit. But how long are the Warriors going to be willing to give Kuminga as a featured player? And also, what the purpose of that is? I don't know if you saw that yesterday, Shams Charania had a report that the Warriors are again, I mean, it's like just regurgitated blabber. But they're looking for another star to pair alongside Curry, as they've been for seemingly the last 3 years. But I thought the timing of it was pretty interesting that it happens the morning after Kuminga goes and has a career night. That to me indicates that this is where the clock is now on Kuminga, for better or for worse. You have essentially 2 months until the trade deadline, and the Warriors have to figure out what they have in a condensed period of time, because remember, he hasn't had the first 3 years of his career to experiment and to play and to do things the way that other members of his draft class has. The clock's now on Kuminga, and I think the Warriors have to lean all the way in, or they have to go back to what they were doing before. So what they did last night, to me, is naturally going to happen when you try and feature a player that has never been featured before. But you might also get a game like Wednesday, in which that player who's featured helps you win against a good basketball team.
Well, I think he was featured a year ago when Draymond Green was out, wasn't he?
But that was by process of elimination. Like, my point is, Kuminga is now being specifically chosen over Draymond Green to start at the power forward position. That's pretty significant. I realize that Draymond is coming off an injury. You want to keep his minutes down. There's also reasons that Kerr can sell to Draymond why this is good for you, especially in the long run. And that's also something that I did note. But this is the first time when they basically have picked double zero and said, you're our guy.
Well, whether it's process of elimination or the fact that he's now jumped Draymond Green and is now inserted into the starting lineup, however it is that he arrived there, the idea of the roller coaster has to come to an end, and he has to be a consistent scorer. And I guess I'm one of those that's just run out of patience. I don't really care.
You are a patient guy, though.
How he got there, but he's got...
Just not with sports.
Well, not with Jonathan Kuminga. I don't know, Ev, that it's ever going to... I just don't know that it's ever going to happen with the Warriors. And we've seen this before. There is precedence here. Think about Harrison Barnes. And Harrison sort of, it's different, but you knew the talent was there, but he was so inconsistent. And he was a frustrating player as well, just to take you back. But the moment he got beyond the shadows of Steph, Draymond, and Klay,
where he didn't really know is, am I the one? Am I the two? Am I the three? What option am I? And he goes to Dallas, and this was Dallas before Dallas became, you know, Luka-centric. And he balled out. And he's done the same thing in Sacramento, where he's like more of a number one. And I think it depends on your personality. But I think that for Jonathan Kuminga, at the end of the day, the best thing that might be for this young man is to get traded and go to a Charlotte, go to an Orlando. Well, not Orlando, because Orlando's good now, but go to a team that's in the middle of a so-called rebuild and be the guy. Because I really do think that there is something to the fact that he is just not the same player when those two guys are on the floor.
888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, Warriors This Week, every single Saturday from 9 to noon, chopping it up about the Dubs, who now, after a loss last night, 107-90 to the Minnesota Timberwolves, are 13-9. They have lost six of their last seven. I think last night indicates a significant shift towards what they're trying to get to, or maybe just a response to how they've played, which is relatively poorly, especially, as Dan pointed out, on the offensive end. From the 415 of the Comcast Business Text Line, first of all, shout out to Arts Cafe on 9th and Irving. No, is hanging out, having a beef bulgogi hash brown sandwich.
That sounds, 9th and Irving.
That sounds delicious, yeah.
Let me know.
Inner Sunset.
Yeah, I know Inner Sunset. Is Herb still there on Terravelle? Please get back to me.
Well, it's a little further down.
It is. I'm trying to think 9th and Irving. There used to be Polly Ann's.
See, you guys have such a big neighborhood to try and broach. It's almost impossible. I can barely get through all the Mission. I mean, I don't even know all these streets and different nooks and crannies.
Well, it's alphabetized, if you ever know the Sunset, right? So I think it starts at, what is it, like Ortega, Pacheco, Quintara, what's R? Somebody give me R. S is Santiago, T is Terravelle, U is Yoloa, V is Vicente, W is Wawona.
You're from the Sunset, right?
No, I went to school at St. Ignatius.
Oh, there you go.
I know the fog, bro.
Oh, there you go.
I went from St. Ignatius to Seattle, and people were saying, oh, from California to Seattle, you're going to hate it. I'm like, dude, I grew up in the Sunset. Or I went to
school. There's a lot more precipitation.
Yeah, not much.
I mean, what, you live in rain for 9 months of the year.
Yeah, but that dark cloud that hovers over Seattle and doesn't move for 8 months is very similar to the darkness.
Fog is one thing, but the occasional sideways winds off the Sound is something completely different.
We're both miserable. In the Sunset and out in Seattle. Now, Sunset used to be, you know, firemen and cops, and it's, you know, just like everything else, a lot, it's unaffordable for a lot of people, but it was really a blue-collar, awesome neighborhood with a tremendous sort of backbone and clear identity. I don't really know what it's like now. I haven't spent a lot of time out in the Sunset, but, you know, you got the beach.
You're tucked away in your castle.
What you would always do at St. Ignatius or anybody is, like, especially when you're a teenager, you go to the 7-Eleven, you get your beers, and you go down to the beach.
They just let you get beers in high school?
No. You'd have to get somebody to buy up.
Mm.
So what you would do as a kid, you would stand in front of Mr. B's out on Terravelle, and you'd wait for somebody who looked as though they were of age, and you'd say, hey, man, can you buy up for us?
Rivera. That's the street you were looking for.
Rivera. Thank you very much. And so someone would go in, and they get your beers, and they come out, and, you know, down the block or in the alley, they give you your beers, and you're like, thanks so much, keep the change, whatever. I can't tell you how many times we got ripped off when we were sitting there on Irving or Terravelle or Ocean and just waiting for the guy. And then we go inside, and we're like, hey, is there a back door to this place? And Mr. B's like, yeah, out there. I'm like, oh, God, we just got scammed again.
Well, that's a rite of passage. If you don't get ripped off for beer money, I don't know if you're living. 888-957-9570 is the number again. Evan and Dan with the Warriors This Week. Let's go out to, let's stick in the city. Let's talk to Gloria in San Francisco. Gloria, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. I'm doing pretty good. On my way to walk around Lake Merced, and I thought, let me chime in. I was on an emotional high on the evening before when the Warriors were able to beat Houston without Steph and Dre. I was really cautious. I didn't really want to watch the game because I just almost put it as an immediate loss. But they played gritty, and they were able to make their mistakes. And that game did look like a game back in the 90s where no one could really shoot. But the grit of the Warriors' defense prevailed, and they were able to just score just a little bit more. But with a team like Minnesota, they have so much length. And I know Houston is athletic, but I agree that Minnesota is, to me, a better all-around team and definitely can score. It was difficult to see the Warriors not be able to shoot. And I'm really concerned about Buddy Hield right now. He's in a major slump. And Moody is right behind him in another slump. And we really need their scoring. And to the point about Kuminga playing when Steph and Dre is on the court, you know, both of your points rang true in my mind. I would think that Kuminga playing on a team that is an upstart trying to get their identity, he would be able to make his mistakes and not have a big brother looking over his shoulder. But with that being said, could they get the right type of player for Steph to be able to compete for another ring? What are your thoughts?
Thanks, Gloria. I'm actually glad that Gloria asked that question because this is something that I've been sitting on for a minute. The idea of bringing in another player to play alongside Curry, to me, it's as much about fit as it is about also skill and just overall level. Like, the Warriors are, offensively, anemic. They can't put the ball in the hole. But Steph's part of that problem sometimes. And it's not just like if you bring in somebody else, he's all of a sudden going to transform into 2016 Steph Curry. I'm not saying that Steph is the biggest issue that plagues this team, but he's older. He's right now dealing with ailing knees. He clearly is not going to be able to get his shot off without some sort of other help, a la Buddy Hield, or maybe it's Kuminga or Wiggins. But down the stretch of games, Curry has had moments, but I don't think he's at an age where he's going to all of a sudden just consistently take you to the finish line the way he could do even 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, I'm still, from what I've seen of Curry thus far this season and his body of work, I think that he's at least reassured me the way he's closed out Boston and some of these huge games, Dallas come to mind, that he's still got it. He just clearly needs help. And yes, is he Steph Curry of, you know, 3 to 5 years ago? No, he's not that guy. Call him a 1A if you can bring in somebody that's a volume scorer. And getting back to Buddy Hield, this is who Buddy Hield is. This is gets back to what it is that I was saying, that you just need the season to breathe a little bit before we pass judgment on everybody. This is who Buddy Hield was in Sacramento. This is why Buddy Hield couldn't get into the rotation with Philadelphia a year ago, is that when he's on, just like all shooters, you know, it's a party. Feed the guy. But when he's not feeling it, this is what happens. Rizzo's waving us to a break. Riz is in the big seat these days.
Yes, he is. Steven Rizzotto.
14 years of age. He's got a biology class after this show.
Well, take it easy on him. I know you're hard on the Reardon kids, but you got to take it easy on him, okay? He's working his hardest. Ken's back there coaching him up in an Oakland A's hat formerly. And look, we're trying to piece this thing together one play at a time. You know, we're not going to go out and score 100 every night, Dan. But sometimes we can get enough stops on this show, which apparently we need to hit one right now, in order to be a successful group, a successful foursome, a fearsome foursome. And that's where we're going to go to next. I see Gregor Martinez wants to talk about Kuminga last night's game as the Warriors lose to the Timberwolves. Let's try and solve this thing. Let's try and figure this thing out. Over the last week, where have the Warriors gone? Where are they moving? And how much has featuring Jonathan Kuminga either giving you confidence or maybe a bit of, I have no clue what the Warriors are trying to do right now. 888-957-9570. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, and Warriors This Week. Back after this.
Looney had a real good night last night. Gets pushed by Gobert. Pass over to Bajemski. Finds Curry up the screen. Back over to Looney. One dribble. Gets it to Kuminga. Corner three. It's up and popped around and down for Jonathan Kuminga. And the crowd roars its approval as the Warriors lead 3-0.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Well, I think the only three that Kuminga made last night.
First shot of the game.
Really? So first shot goes up and in, and then just crickets rest of the way. See, that's where I do think that part of it is aggression. Part of it is mindset. Part of it's also just trying to figure out where he fits. Like, that was one thing that after Wednesday night that I was the most curious about and was kind of, I don't know, trying to ask people to just pump the brakes a little bit. Like, when Kuminga plays alone or without one of the two, Draymond or Steph, particularly Curry, well, then he does play differently. But when he's with Steph, and this is where he's going to have to take the next step, I also think that Curry needs to acquiesce a little bit to Kuminga if they indeed want to feature him the way they do. He's going to look different, and there's going to be growing pains, and I think last night was Exhibit A of that.
I've been hearing growing pains with this guy. We're going on 4 years.
No, but now we're in a different place, Dan.
Yeah, I get it.
He's finally in the place that the Wagners or the Barneses or the Cunninghams, other players in his draft class, the Jalen Greens, were at in their rookie or sophomore seasons, which is, okay, you're the guy, you can make mistakes, and you're not going to get yanked.
We're running out of excuses to try and understand why this guy is lacking the consistency and continues to be a tease. At least I am. And I think that a change of venue might be the best thing for both parties at this point. I don't think that he's going to reach full potential with the Golden State Warriors. And I think a lot of it has to do with just sort of the way the team is constructed, that it's still Steph's team and it's two future Hall of Famers. And as long as they're on the floor, that he doesn't have a level of freedom that we saw the other night. And to me, it's just so very clear. And it's not about shooting. When he's got it going, he'll let it fly, whether Steph's on the floor or Draymond's on the floor. And if he's got guys, he's taking off the bounce, or he's getting to the rim and dunking on people in transition, he doesn't care. But it's when he misses shots. And every good shooter misses shots. You know who's a good example of a young player who misses shots and does not give a rip?
LaMelo Ball.
Is Wemby and LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball, perfect example.
He takes one-footed step-back threes and no care in the world.
Yeah, and he has absolutely the free reign to do so by his head coach. And I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a perfect example of being in one system where it's like, do whatever it is that you're going to do because we believe in you at the end of the day. And then you have Jonathan Kuminga in the Warriors system, which is entirely different. And Wembanyama is another guy who's just going to shoot it. And he'll miss five in a row, but he knows that it's coming, and San Antonio believes in him, and they know that at some point it's going to balance out. You don't have that. At least Jonathan Kuminga doesn't think that he has that long leash.
Yeah, but the Charlotte Hornets are 6-16, have lost seven in a row. Like, I think the Warriors are trying to figure out how to, again, feature this player and promote him, coinciding with winning basketball games. And that's a hard thing to do. That's why, again, I'm interested to see how it plays out over the rest of the month, particularly against really good opponents like the ones that they have played, the ones they have coming up, because I am with you from this standpoint. Again, I said this in the first segment, I'll say it again. The clock is ticking for Kuminga. One, because they got to make a decision about his contract at the end of the year. Number two, you get the trade deadline in a few months. So you do have to really figure out whether or not you want to move this guy or not. I'm not saying that you're wrong. In fact, you may end up being right. They might choose to trade this player and try and upgrade around the roster and get someone who fits alongside Curry a bit better. But for right now, I do think that these growing pains are something that we're going to have to live through. And I also think the Warriors showed that they have in the past, both last year and this year, when Kuminga's been able to get extended run, that they can win games and not just be the LaMelo Ball Charlotte Hornets that are taking a ton of shots, putting up individual points, and failing to be a 500 basketball team.
Yeah, I listen, it's part of the reason why Jonathan Kuminga has, it's unfair to compare him to LaMelo Ball or anybody in Draymond Green's draft class that is doing well. But 4 years in is 4 years in. At some point, he's got to you know, he's either part of the system and recognizing that his leash isn't as long and that his run or his time is going to be much more limited on the floor, but you still got to contribute. And it's just, I thought last night's game was really notable. Like, we do so many of the, you do every game, right? You do 82 games, you do pre and post.
Well, they all blend together, but.
And I think last night was one of those games that it was like, okay, is Jonathan Kuminga going to maintain what it is that he did last night? Is this going to be a thing, or is it just one of those, it was an outlier? He had a big game because he had to step up because there was no Steph. Or is he going to be that missing piece that everybody, when you're handicapping the Golden State Warriors, we all arrive at one conclusion, and that is, who's the number two to Steph? And the best case scenario for everybody that's a Warriors fan is that it's somebody in-house so that you don't have to go out and get that free agent. You don't have to make that trade and give up all those draft picks. And that guy in-house is Jonathan Kuminga. And so after the breakout game, and Evan, I also point out that it wasn't just the 33 points. It's when he scored those points. It was in clutch time and he drove them home.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, my God, it's time. It's appeared. He's here. Let's go. And then last night happens. And he was so forgettable. The 13 points, and you could see that he checked out of that game. The confidence wasn't there. He wanted nothing to do with taking over a basketball game because he had missed a couple of shots and got into that funk. And I don't know, you know, how it is that you resurrect this guy. You know, I don't want to belabor the point, but you know how I feel about it. I just think that he's too deferential when he sees Steph Curry on the floor. But whatever the reason is, he wasn't the same guy he was the night before against Houston, and that's notable.
Well, and whether he's scoring or whether he's not, again, the biggest issue with this team, in my opinion, is the fact that they cannot consistently put the ball in the hole. And it's when Curry's in, it's been when Curry's out, it's been when Draymond's in, it's been when Draymond's out. The Warriors are 4-1 without Curry this year. They're 1-1 without Draymond. But even in games which they've won, they struggle to score. Even on Wednesday, they scored 99 points and won the game. 99 points is not that much. And so the Warriors are in a challenging place of trying to do a lot of things at the same time. And I just want to see what fans feel about it. After last night's loss, maybe after Wednesday, they've lost 6 of 7. They're 13-9 basketball team. Let's go to Greg in Martinez once again into last night. Greg, you're on Warriors This Week with Evan Giddings and Dan Devone. How are you?
Good. How you doing? Hey, Evan, I agree with you. Kuminga, he can learn to score with Curry on the floor. He just needs to focus on going to the hole and attacking the paint instead of just settling for threes. He wasn't even playing on defense. He wasn't even in the game against Houston. He was helping with rebounds against Shangoon. He didn't show up to help with get rebounds at all. He didn't use his athleticism to engage himself in the game at all last night. But the whole team was disjointed. I mean, they had a bunch of turnovers. I think the points off turnovers for both teams wasn't that much of a difference. There was a lot of dead ball turnovers, but the whole offense was disconjointed. Everybody was in a funk, but he can get his game in any game if he focuses on going to the hole, but he was just settling for threes and just sitting in the corner. He wasn't moving, wasn't cutting, and they didn't run any plays like pick and roll with him and Curry to get people off him or help Steph get open. I mean, the whole offense was really bad last night. What's your thoughts on the game last night in that perspective?
Well, I'm with you. And I was listening on my way home from Sacramento from a beautiful wedding between Jackson and Aaron Watt, listening to the great Dan Devone, who is breaking down what you're talking about, Greg, the 22 turnovers. And actually, this is something you've been on for a long time. It's just, it's who the Warriors are, but Mattingly so.
Yeah.
They're just loose and careless with the ball. They always have been, and they probably always will be.
Well, that's a sad indictment, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
I mean, because you could be loose and careless with the basketball back in 2016 because that's who you were. You were a team that was, again, you know, you reset the way basketball is played currently in the NBA by shooting threes. But now there is no margin of error for the Golden State Warriors. And so for them to turn the ball over as frequently as they do for a team that wants to win with defense and slowing it down and using 13 guys, that's not conducive to winning. That's just bad basketball.
You know when they did take care of the ball?
When?
Wednesday. Against Houston.
That's right. How many turnovers in that game?
I think like 10. Only 10.
And the turnovers were so careless. I mean, part of it's because Minnesota's a good defensive team. At least they've been much better over the last, 8 to 10 games. And they're long and athletic, but a lot of that was just, maybe it was the back-to-back, but really inexplicable. And my man, Trace Jackson Davis, who threw one into the fourth row.
You sure you still want him as your man?
Well, I just got to tell you that, yeah, you're right. I think you hit me up the other day. He's in his own head, too. He and Pajemski ought to they ought to be roommates and turn that thing into a reality show of two confused young men in their sophomore seasons in the NBA.
No, I don't want to kill either of them. They both haven't played very well. But I always thought it was funny. Then I think because Trace Jackson Davis doesn't play as much as Pods does, that there was this idea that he wasn't suffering from a sophomore slump, but like TJD is shooting less than 50% on non-dunks. He hasn't been able to finish around the cup, and he's not an offensive threat unless he's rolling to the rim and catching lobs. And the Warriors, really, I would say the only player that last year I feel like consistently played in the pick and roll with him, well, there were two guys, and they're no longer on the team. It was Klay Thompson and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And so, from one
standpoint, Thompson really unlocked him.
Exactly. But the Warriors haven't really played a lot of PNR with Trace Jackson Davis, and I think that's another reason why he struggled.
I think his confidence is shot right now. And when you think about Pajemski, and by the way, those two obviously in the same draft class a year ago, good friends, and Pajemski's just a mess. And I know, I'm a big fan of his as well. But now I'm beginning to lean towards those callers, and I'm sure that, we'll hear from them this afternoon that, why does Pajemski get to play so much? Why does he get so much burn? He's the teacher's pet. Steve Kerr loves him. And I would always defend Pajemski because I'm like, look at all the other things that he does. That's where Steve Kerr puts an emphasis on rebounding, taking the charges, understanding defensive rotations, knowing how to balance the floor, get the ball in the right guy's hands. And Pajemski does all those things. But again, does the end justify the means? Because he cannot score the basketball. And how many of those guys do you want on one team with Pajemski, Looney, GP2, Draymond Green, Trace Jackson Davis, who just sit around and have other functions other than to score the ball? Maybe, it used to be just GP2 and Draymond Green a little bit, but now there's like five guys, and that ain't a winning formula. And Pajemski, he's got it. He's just, and if he can't score, then I think his trajectory in this league and as far as his career is concerned, I at least need to readdress, because if he can't score and that's all he's going to give you, if we're looking at this as not just he's in a funk, but this is Pajemski going forward, then we need to reassess, especially if you're Steve Kerr, giving this guy as much time.
Well, the issue is, who else are you going to play? Like Pat Spencer?
Well, if healthy, I think you need to see a little more Moody. I do think you need to see a little more Lindy Waters. I thought it was really peculiar in the game against Houston, where you're down Steph and you're down DeAnthony Melton and you need scorers, and Pajemski's not giving you anything, and Pajemski played well against Houston, that Lindy Waters is DNP, because he's the one guy on your team that could potentially be a volume scorer if he gets into a rhythm. Now, if he's not feeling it, you can sit him down, but he has the potential of spacing the floor because he's one of your few shooters on the team. And I think it's guys like that that are not going to maybe supplant Pajemski in a starting role or his minutes, but at least reduce those minutes, because, young man, you've got to give me something offensively.
But, I'm 100% with you. To me, it's less about him scoring as whole as just you can't shoot 35% from the field and 22% from three. Like, you can't do that and play 35 minutes a night, which I guess he's only doing when Steph is out. But the other problem is that he, along with, right now, a lot of different Warriors are in slumps. I mean, that's how, over the last seven games, again, they've only won one of them, they're, I believe, either 28th or 29th in offense. Like, they are putrid. They can't score the ball. That only happens when Pajemski can't put the ball in the hole. Buddy Hield has cratered back down to earth. Someone like Trace Jackson Davis is going through a sophomore slump. Lindy Waters even is not shooting particularly that well. He's only shooting 35% so far from three this season. Moses Moody has regressed from three-point range. Gary Payton II, I do not want to see shoot another three this season. There are a lot of players on this team that are rotational role guys that were helping you at the beginning of the year, and all of a sudden either they've come back down to earth or they're going through individual slumps all at the same time. So again, I think the Warriors can come out of this, but the idea of just playing this guy over that guy because this guy's not performing, I hate to break it to you, outside of your top two or three, no one's scoring.
Buddy Hield's an interesting situation because, well, we call the other two guys slumps. Are they slumps? I mean, I guess I need to see sort of a longer or more detailed resume.
Well, I'm assuming Pods is not going to be a career 22% three-point shooter.
I just haven't seen him play enough basketball for me to arrive at any sort of conclusions as to who he is as a basketball player as far as scoring. It's same with Trace Jackson Davis. I need to see at least a couple of years before I can say, okay, well, listen, man, you need to be shooting a lot better than that. But as far as Buddy Hield is concerned, who's been in the league long enough where we can say, okay, we know who Buddy Hield is. And this, well, Buddy Hield is struggling, but Buddy Hield always struggles at some point in the season. Then he'll catch fire. That's sort of, you know, Buddy Hield is the pure definition of an NBA shooter. This is, you know, this is the way they live. But I think the one thing that I've recognized about Buddy Hield, and so have other teams, when you think about the beginning of the season, two things jump out at me. Trace Jackson Davis was so good, and Buddy Hield was the number two to Steph Curry and was, you know, that guy that we're talking about, a volume shooter that was scoring the basketball. Buddy Hield does not have the capability of getting his own shot. I mean, he can, but he is clearly a guy who's a catch and shoot and somebody that has to have the feet set and a good look at the front rim, and he can be dangerous. And he's good in transition where defenses are scrambling. But as far as a guy up on his face or running him off the line, he does not have the handle or the ability to get that step back, which most guys have in their bag that are three-point shooters, whether it's Trae Young or whomever. They'll cross you up, step you back, sidestep. And he doesn't have – he can do it, but he does not shoot it well. And I think teams recognize that if you get up and in Buddy Hield's face, that you can nullify him. And we're beginning to see that. And you know, it's just, it's Buddy Hield and it's a bunch of guys right now that can't score. But I think a lot of teams have just, they've passed around the tape. They're like, okay, this is what the Warriors did early on in the season. Let's counter that. And the question now is, do the Warriors have a counter move to sort of get back on track?
888-957-9570 is the number. Warriors this week, Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, every single Saturday, 9 to noon on 95.7 The Game. Let's go down and talk to Austin in San Jose, who wants to get into the roster of the Warriors. Austin, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, fellas. Happy Saturday. Yeah, I you know, listen, quick comment on the guys that we seem to get too much airtime. I mean, listen, I'm not going to call up and rail on Pods because I think he gets enough. The guy plays hard. Not his fault that Kerr is playing him in out of position. The guy just has limited talent. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, he's not a shooter. He's not going to be a shooter. He's really a backup point guard on a good team. He shouldn't be a guy that's on the court when a team like the Warriors was struggling. They need guys with talent, guys that can put the ball in the hole. So I think that's enough said about Pajemski. Kuminga. I don't buy this notion that the reason why he can't seem to get to his height is because of Steph and Dre. I don't buy that at all. They're in fact encouraging this kid to reach his. Why would Curry and Kuminga be in the way of Kuminga? That doesn't make sense to me. So I think that's something that we need to think a little bit about. I think Kuminga probably, as you guys said, miscast here. But you know, if you're not going to play the kid and allow him to become whoever he is with mistakes. Even stars make mistakes, guys. So I don't know why we seem to dwell on what Kuminga doesn't do well. Well, you show me a star that does everything well. What he has to do is be really good at what he does well. That's what he has to do. We don't need to worry about his deficiency. If he's really good, you won't worry so much about his deficiencies. Trust me. So my whole thing with Kuminga is that they should either play him or move him for someone who they can bring in that can start. The Warriors need starters. They need guys that can finish. They need performers. They need pros. Not necessarily a star, but they need a guy that's a pro that knows how to play and they can put into that starting five. So this notion of 12 guys, Dan, you know, I never bought the college 12 guy kumbaya thing. I don't think it works in the NBA. I think it worked for a while because they got wins. But you can't tell me pros are interested in playing that style. Steve Kerr, man, I mean, you guys seem to give him a pass with how he manages a roster. This is the second year in a row where he can't get a starting five. I mean, come on. I mean, this is unacceptable. And the final thing is the other night, man, watching the Warriors. You guys are talking about the old Warriors versus the new Warriors. My God. They had Slo-Mo out there, Pazinski, GP2. I mean, it was painful to watch. I mean, and Dunleavy seems to like slow guys. I mean, he's drafting a bunch of guys and bringing in Slo-Mo and drafting Pazinski. These are some of the slowest guys in the NBA, guys. So I just – final thing, and I'll stop talking. Steph Curry. We need to recognize that Steph Curry is on the – he's diminishing. Those creaky knees are – acting up right now. He is not the guy that he was. He's 5 for 15, was it last night? So let's stop acting like he's still the same Curry. He's not. They better find a number 1A soon, or this is a play-in team, man. That's what I got. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Austin. A lot of good points there. A lot of good things to unpack. Where do you want to start? I mean, to me, I think the last part I kind of agree with. If the Warriors are going to make a trade, ideally, it's for a player that is at an equal or higher level than Curry, but I don't know who is actually out there that's attainable.
Curry or Kuminga?
No, Curry.
Curry.
Like, Curry's 36 years old. Curry's being asked to carry a roster, essentially, or has been until they decided to start featuring Kuminga, by himself, offensively. He's the one. Look around the rest of the league. There's no other team that is asking what the Warriors are asking of Steph Curry at his age.
Denver, maybe?
At his age.
Oh, at his age.
Jokic is in his prime.
Yeah.
He's coming off of 3 of 4 MVPs. He might win another one this year. There are players that are being asked to do what Curry has, but not at age 36 with double knee tendonitis.
Sounds terrible.
I'm just saying, like,
double knee tendonitis.
Or bilateral. Whatever, bilateral femoral pain. Whatever medical term you want to use, the Warriors are asking an aging man to carry this roster in a way that I don't think any other player, maybe in the history of basketball, for his size, his position, and his, to the caller's point, diminished ability, is being asked to do.
Well, I hate to break it to everybody, but that player doesn't exist. There's nobody out there that you can trade for that's available.
I agree.
That is going to be that guy. So, you know, therein lies the sort of Warrior conundrum, if you will. And just really quick, Austin, I guess, you know, Austin and I love to disagree just about every Saturday, but you're not going to convince me that, and he's spot on a lot of his stuff, that Jonathan Kuminga, listen, it doesn't matter how Jonathan Kuminga scores the basketball, just score the damn thing and be consistent about it. And whether it's your three, you're feeling it, or getting to the rim, that's what scorers do. They'll put it on the deck some nights, or they're feeling it from the outside. It varies. But you're not going to convince me that being within the structure of the Warriors, just imagine if they didn't draft Weissman and they draft LaMelo Ball. Do you think LaMelo Ball has the rookie season he had with Charlotte if he's playing alongside Steph Curry? I'll answer that for you. No way in hell.
No, but he's got a ring. The thing that, again, we can get into this on the other side. I do think that there is a shift that is happening in Golden State. And my biggest question is, can they win games while they figure out how this shift impacts both their team, their season, and their future? 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings and Dan DeVone back after this on Warriors This Week.